it defies all the odds. It continues to bat above its weight in terms of the business. I mean, when you think about who we're competing against, if Google Pixel have gone all in following their Fitbit acquisition, Garmin is a huge company. Do I need to mention Apple in California? That's who we're competing against. And we're this relatively small pre-IPO 500-ish independent company based in Boston that aren't just competing, but we're winning. There's something very interesting happening in that building.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today is a very special episode for me personally. I've been a Whoop user since 2019, and today I get to find out all the inside scoop. My guest today is Breen Curtin, the VP of Global Marketing at Whoop. Here's my chat with Breen. Going green, becoming more sustainable, it's everywhere, right? Everyone wants to be greener and do their bit to help. But sometimes, for your business, there are more important things to do. It's hard to find the time. Well, take it out of your hands because it's all in a day's work for your local enterprise office. They have the time and the experts to sort it for you. And the best bit is, it'll help your business, save you time, money, and energy. Perfect, right? The Green for Business audit will assess your business and tell you where you can make changes. And the new energy efficiency grant will help you pay for those changes. And your local enterprise office will sort the whole process for you. Go to www.allinadayswork.ie/green, fill out the form that takes less than 2 minutes, and your local enterprise office will take it from there. Going green? It's all in a day's work for your local enterprise office.
Breen, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Lovely to be here.
To say I'm excited to have you on the pod is an understatement.
I know.
So no pressure.
I feel like a fraud.
No, absolutely not. July 2019, I got my first Whoop.
Old school.
Good Very man. Old school. I'm bloody proud of that fact.
OG.
I'm coming up on 1,000 consecutive tracking nice. Days. And I, honest to God, I check it every day. Like, it's going to change dramatically, but every day I'm like one day closer to 1,000. Means nothing, except to me, it means everything.
Nice.
Yes, I love it. I absolutely love it. So I'll declare my fanboyism right up front so people can just learn that I'm going to fall on this one. What a company. I absolutely love the brand. Explain to people briefly what it is if they don't know.
Sure. So Whoop is, as a product, it is an unintrusive wearable that effectively acts as a personal optimization tool. As a business, I think we are one of the most powerful challengers in any category on the planet today. And I think we are on the path of a generational brand.
Personal optimization tool. I'm stealing that because people always, I was telling this already, people always ask me, like in the gym or the sauna, what is that and is it good? And I always spend about 10 minutes explaining it to them because it's my hobby horse. But personal optimization tool just sounds cool as well.
There we go.
But there's just little things about it, like no screen. Love that. Mm-hmm. Love that. Like, you know, we don't need more notifications in our lives.
True. You never have to call an Uber from your wrist.
No. Like, oh, read out that text message. I don't care. I saw someone do it the other day. I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. Like, we just don't need to be that connected. I think we just do not. Like, love that. Like, the long battery life. Like, there's just so many little subtle things that make it great. Mm.
It's also what makes it hard to market.
Interesting.
There's a list of differentiators. Like, we believe passionately that what makes us different is what makes us better. From a design perspective and from a feature perspective, there is a lot of intention behind everything on your wrist and in your app. But it's quite difficult to market a list of 10 things because people just don't have the attention. But the brand is powerful. The whole product and experience is wrapped in this powerful brand that is sort of rooted in this idea of reverse positioning, I think. There's a Harvard professor who's on our board. Her name is Yongmi Moon. She wrote a book called Different. And effectively, it's talking about brands that are challengers in their category. And she references companies like IKEA, for example, right? Where traditional furniture stores They're in the middle of town. You go in, there's, you know, an eclectic mix of things around the store, and somebody will deliver a piece of furniture to you at a particular price. IKEA totally changed their approach to delivering furniture, right? Quite literally, they don't deliver it, first off, right? This warehouse inevitably at the edge of the city, which you have to drive to. You know, there's a unique experience to IKEA, and you choose your bits, and then guess what? You go find them in the warehouse.
On paper, that business would never happen.
Right.
If me and you sat down and were like, right, let's build a new furniture business.
You wheel it out, you figure out how it goes into your car.
And it's so unwieldy.
There's regret. There, at some point at every IKEA trip, you go, oh, crap, we've gone too far. Well, you box it up, and then you have to build it yourself, yeah. Right? But the most interesting thing with that model for me is that it's such a physical trip, that you're not going to go to IKEA and not buy something, right? You've made that investment. You've spent half a day at least.
Yeah. Sunk cost.
You've gotten lost at some point. A child has gone missing in the bed section. You're going to have something in your pocket or on the trolley.
Oh,
leaving
you don't go to IKEA and browse.
Right.
You don't, like, it's funny. We're sitting in our new studio now, and I was saying to my wife, I was like, oh, I have a very clear vision of what I want it to be. And she just texts back and she's like, did somebody say IKEA? I just sent the laughing emoji. She's obsessed. But like, you'll go and you'll spend like probably 500 quid to a grand.
Yeah.
You come home and you're like, oh, great, we've 20 new glasses and a couch. And
but it's such a distinctive business and brand in a very mature category. So, you know, the decisions that Will and the founding team made around things like not having a screen were sort of by being defined by what we're not.
Mm.
And so... Look, the Genesis story has been told many times by Will. He was Will Ahmed. This is our founder. He was a collegiate athlete at Harvard. He was captain of the squash team, and he had a tendency to overtrain. And he became obsessed with physiology. He wasn't studying it, but there's urban legend at this point as to how many papers he actually read. I hear anything from 150 to 500 papers. It seems to grow every time the story is told. But he became obsessed about understanding the human body. And he had this insight where the trackers that were available at the time, whether it be your Jawbones or your Nike Fuel Band, if you remember that.
I had one.
Fitbit was around.
Yeah, I had a Fitbit, I had a Fuel Band. I tried them all.
They tracked activity. None of them were telling you how that activity impacted your body.
Step counters, essentially. Fancy step counters. Bingo. Yeah.
And so he didn't set out. He didn't even, he says he didn't realize he was starting at a company at the time. But he set out to solve a problem that he personally was finding. And then he identified that many people were having that problem.
It's the best way to start a company. It's the best.
Here we are, 12 years later.
And that's, it's long but it's short. Like, it is a lot. To build a company of this scale, like, since 2019 I've been on the journey with you guys, like, and to see when I had it first, 2019, no one had a clue. Mm-hmm. From 2019 to about 2021, people are like, what is that? And like, now obviously, like, the growth, but the marketing and the awareness has grown so exponentially, and just even the marketing in the last kind of like 12 months with the athletes, I was just, the first time I saw the athlete data shared, I was like, chef's kiss. There it is.
Appreciate that.
Oh, it's beautiful. Because I was just like, that's exactly what you want to know. Because I'm obsessed by athletes, what they eat, what they sleep, what's their day, what they do on a Tuesday. Mm. Like, obsessed. When I can see, and when you can track yourself against them, when you can benchmark it and go, oh, that's what they burn in a match or whatever. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So there's a whole strategy behind that. I remember that my first interview with Will 4 years ago, and it was really based around how Whoop exists today. It defies all the odds. It continues to bat above its weight in terms of the business. I mean, when you think about who we're competing against, if Google Pixel have gone all in following their Fitbit acquisition, Garmin is a huge company. Do I need to mention Apple in California? That's who we're competing against. Mm. And we're this relatively small, pre-IPO, 500-ish independent company based in Boston that aren't just competing, but we're winning. There's something very interesting happening in that building.
But very rarely do you see a brand new hardware technology company come out and go like you guys have gone. It's so rare. Mm-hmm. Either it comes out, blows up after 2 years because turns out didn't really have any tech at all. Or, you know, they get gobbled up. Mm-hmm. That's the other side. It was like, they come out to do really well 4 or 5 years and then they get gobbled up by one of the big players. Yeah. Like, so it's so rare to see someone come out and forge a brand new path and establish such an awareness.
Mm. It's all based in strategy.
But you can see it, though. You can see that happening. Like, this doesn't happen by luck.
Yeah. I think there's three legs to that stool, I think. There's the overall business and product strategy. There's a strategy behind our go-to-market. And then there's culture. And that's sort of the three legs to the stool that makes the machine run. From a business strategy or a product strategy perspective, I think it's best articulated through our mission. So the mission of Whoop is to unlock human performance. It's pretty lofty. Let's actually unpack that. So as defined by our global head of human performance, Kristen Holmes, human performance is defined as the ability to perform at one's physical, emotional and mental potential. Now that's rooted, or what's interesting, I think, as a business is we see human performance as a choice. And that choice is rooted in your ability to adapt to the varying demands that is on you at any point in time. That is informed by several key factors, your nutrition, how well you sleep, how well you recover, your ability to manage stress. And so the goal really for our members is to align those behaviors with your physiological state and to optimize those behaviors so that you can unlock your best performance. Mm-hmm. So that the kind of the TLDR on that is that this is an always on research machine on your wrist. So that in the morning, when you wake up and you look at your app, we're not just feeding you a stream of data that you're like, oh yeah, that's interesting, but I don't know what to do with it.
So what? So what is the big question?
Hey, did you know why
you're
red today or why you're yellow? What you could do or how you need to sleep if you want to be green tomorrow? And really For me, the key to Whoop is understanding your body better and your relationship with the decisions that you make, whether it be supplements or sleep habits or when you eat or alcohol is the obvious one that everyone realizes very quickly. Mm. It's a powerful tool to optimize your own personal performance.
Mm. It's a beautiful way of putting it. Like, and I've explained it to people in loads of different ways and the strain, the sleep, the recovery. But that's what it is. It's, mm-hmm. And I always say to people, like, because generally people would be like looking for a silver bullet. I'm like, nothing is a silver bullet. But the data you'll get, if you do want to change, it'll transform your life.
Yeah.
Like, because like we're walking around unknowing what's happening in our body, which today in these makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to be walking around going, oh, how do you feel? It's all subjective.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Good. What does that mean?
Yeah.
But when you can like gather all this data, like I get my monthly performance assessment from Whoop and I go through it and I look to see the trends and the patterns. And that's where the value is.
You are hardcore.
Oh, stop. Like I am all in. But
what you say there is true in terms of not understanding what's happening in your body and this being a monitor for your body. There's some very real examples of that. COVID-19 was the most kind of obvious one where I should also say as part of the business, it's built on data science. We have a huge data science team and we have this wealth of data in our many, many members that they then in turn interpret. But when COVID-19 happened, the team discovered relatively quickly, and then had to validate it before it was brought to market, that there was a clear and obvious correlation between respiratory rate and early onset COVID. And so people could identify, or we could identify and then serve to our members that you were at high risk for COVID. Mm-hmm. Our partnership with the PGA actually started through that. There was a golfer, Nick Watney, discovered on the couple of days before he was due to compete in the PGA that he had COVID through his whoop. Even though the day before, the PGA had protocols where everyone went in on the Wednesday, they did their COVID test, and if you were clear, you went into the PGA bubble. And you got to remember those days, there was nobody on the course. He did the COVID test, came up negative, all good, woke up the next morning, and his whoop was flagging, saying, hey, we think you should consider a rest day. Your respiratory rate is up, you're at risk of COVID. And even though he had been passed by the PGA protocol, he went to those involved in the PGA, in charge in the PGA. They said, sit it out. He tested again. He was positive.
Yeah.
Even though he hadn't developed any symptoms, his body was actually reacting already to the.
There's early warnings. Like, there's early warning systems you get. But for him to be able to perceive that himself, I think I remember hearing the story on the Woo podcast, actually.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing the podcast with Rory and stuff, like, and you kind of see the impact it has for these athletes.
Yeah, it opened a lot of doors for us as a business. And like, on the back of that, the PGA came and said, okay, we want it on every player, every caddy, everybody within the bubble.
Wow.
And then we're the official wearable of the PGA, all of that kicked off from that point. So it's a real privilege. But
it's like the brand association is so good because it looks good. Like, it looks really slick, and you see it on these elite athletes, and you're like, it just looks good. It's not like one of these things you're kind of going, oh, yeah, I get it. But like I take off my Garmin after I run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I run with it on. Yeah. Obviously, I'm tracking my things, but I take it off then straight away. I ran this morning. It's not on my wrist now. Do you know, that's the difference. Like, it really is. It's unobtrusive. It looks well. And then when you see, like, these elite athletes using it, you're going, well, they are seeking the 1%.
Yeah. Exactly.
So for me, it can have an even bigger effect.
Yeah. I mean, that you're touching on this kind of second leg of the stool there, which is the go-to-market strategy. Like, marketing strategy. So I should say, first of all, it is such a privilege as a marketer to have a product that has carved out a distinctive position within the market. And has also has an association with some incredible faces, names, and organizations. So you're working with some pretty good raw ingredients, first of all, right? But you talked about silver bullets a second ago. Marketing is rife with it. You open up LinkedIn, the hyperbole around,
especially fitness
tactics,
it's the worst.
And everybody has a silver bullet, right? But strategy, marketing, go-to-market strategy is three things. It's knowing your audience, segmentation, and really understanding who they are, what motivates them, what differentiates them, what they respond to. It's targeting, so understanding what influences them, so that obviously media consumption habits, but also influences in terms of thought leadership, and positioning. They're the three things. So segmentation, from a Woo perspective, the nucleus of our target audience is, was, and will remain your fitness fanatics. People that take their fitness seriously, your aspiring athletes, your professional athletes. These, you know, anybody that you see in Woo advertising started organically on Woo.
Really?
Yeah.
That's one question you took off my playbook. So I was really curious about how you develop these unbelievable. Because each week I'm like looking at the Woop Instagram going, holy shit, I can't believe they're working with them now.
Yeah.
But like, it's just gone up, 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 up.
It's more fun watching the other match of the day, actually.
You're like, you watch it differently going, oh.
Yeah, my wife loves me rewinding to see what happened when he left off. Yep, Erling Haaland is on Woop.
But the Olympics coverage.
The Olympics is good.
Slick. Yeah, the way you package that up. And feels organic. So yeah. I think one of the beauty of it is that it's cross sport as well. That's one thing kind of dawned on me watching the Olympics. I was like, the golf, the football, the, you know, I kind of knew all those. And I was like, oh, it's across so many sports.
No, for sure. I mean, sport is an interesting backdrop for marketing, period, because it's such a passion point for people. So that kind of speaks to targeting, right? So understanding where consumers are. But there's an approach to the marketing. Seth Godin talks about in his book, I think it's All Marketers Are Liars, I think is the name of the book. And he talks about the difference between advertising and marketing and how advertising is effectively a subset of marketing. It's pushing your message out. It's interrupting your consumers, whereas marketing is about understanding an audience. It's about building relationships, community, and creating value for the members. And that is so part, so core of how we market, right? That approach to not always being advertising, actually producing content that people want to consume. Some of the activity around the Olympics is a really good example. We released data for Cristiano Ronaldo in the middle of the Euros recently around
that his was really cool
penalty kicks, yeah. Right?
The heart rate, and it's class.
Yeah, like such a simple idea. We basically correlated his heart rate against what was happening on the pitch at the same time. So effectively, the story behind it was this man, this bloody machine of a man, and his ability to control his stress level, to relax his heart rate to a point where he was able to slot that first penalty for his team. But we kept going with the data, and we plotted his teammates scoring the goals and the saves happening at the same time. And you can see in his heart rate data the emotion attached to winning that game. Like such a powerful story, and it caught fire, which is amazing. But underpinning it all, without actually being overt about it, what we're telling you is the best in the world are wearing this thing. The data accuracy is there, and the trust is there, it's that I guess is the difference between marketing and advertising.
It's the beauty of when the product can tell the story itself.
Yeah.
You're not like trying to cook up these crazy campaigns. You're like, sometimes you watch a campaign, you're like, what? Why are they on a boat? I was like, very rarely do you see ads anymore, but you're kind of going, me and my wife will go, quick, what do you think it's for? And it was like, because often you can't tell.
But Gary, you just said something there. I don't think you realize just how important an insight it is for marketers. You just said very rarely do you see ads anymore.
Yep.
We were talking a while ago about the days of Extravision on a Friday night, right?
R.I.P. Extravision. You were such an important part of my childhood.
Happy memories. But on a Tuesday night, I can tell you right now, you were sitting down at 8 p.m. on Tuesday night to turn on Network 2. Which it wasn't RT2, it was Network 2 at the time, to tune into Friends.
Yeah.
Because, God help you, if you went to school on the Wednesday and you didn't know what was happening, right?
Yeah.
There was, everything was appointment to view, and it was like shooting fish in a barrel for marketers. I was the golden age of advertising, is what I'd say. It was because you also didn't have a second screen to look down on at even today you could say, yes, your Game of Thrones or your Champions League or whatever appointment to views, but
no.
Are you holding that attention during halftime?
You're not.
It's getting harder and harder. So changing your thinking from, hey, let's create an ad and put a big media buy behind it, there's a time and a place for that, no doubt. But the advertisers who recognize that the more engaging that they produce marketing material, whether they be ads or social content or, you know, earned or owned and your own podcast, etc., adding value to your consumers, building that relationship with them, which has to be rooted in a deep understanding of who they are, what their hopes and dreams are, what value you can add to those members in our case, goes from being an interruptive advertiser to a brand that, I mean, you pay for that thing in your wrist and you're speaking so passionately about it. How many things that you pay for would you speak like that about?
So rare.
Right?
Very few. Very, very few. Like, it's a magic thing. Like, it's, you talked about there, but the captive audience, it's not just a thing anymore. Because we're so distracted. We're so distracted all the time by our phones.
Yeah.
So to cut through that noise is immensely challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as part of that, though, is acknowledging that people are distracted. And so we don't all have, you know, powerful production houses sitting in our marketing departments. You should definitely start thinking about it if you don't. But, you know, the power of things like influencer marketing right now, it's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of really terrible partnership marketing happening. But finding the authentic voices that can help you tell a story to a real audience.
Mm.
There is a lot of like jazz hands, snake oil.
Even the word influencer is like, well.
True, right? You know? But I can tell you right now, it's very powerful when you get it right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think it has to be rooted in authenticity. And that goes back to the point I made about all of our athlete partners starting as organic wearers of the product.
Mm.
Because when that happens, whether it be Sha'Carri Richardson or Virgil van Dijk or David Clifford down in Kerry, they're so much easier to work with because we can tell deep stories because they're wearing it 24/7 because that's how you get the best out of the product and they're into it, you know?
Yeah. And like they must get bombarded with stuff. They must, like their agents and the people around them must get bombarded with things every week.
Mm.
Like the holy grail is to get these people like using it or endorsing it or whatever. And that costs like hundreds of thousands of euro for a couple of Instagram stories, like, which is going to go nowhere. Because like you talked about there, the one and done approach just doesn't work anymore. Like it's the consistency over time. What's the messaging over time? Because we're so distracted, you do need to see it 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times. Go, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
It's wild. True. Like, no, we literally have the goldfish brain now. I was with a friend of mine who works for one of the big social media giants, and he was saying that's down to 2 seconds.
Oh, it's depressing.
It's horrific. But like you say, it is depressing, but you have to be aware of it and go, okay, that's what you're dealing with now. And how do you counteract that? You counteract that by having incredible stories all the time. You consistent, like I do this podcast every single week and I have done for 5 years. And it's only in the last 18 months that I'm getting any sort of serious traction. Like that's what it takes. It is. Yeah. It's what it takes.
Yeah.
And I think we have a skewed reality of this due to social media. People see people blow up, especially on TikTok now. Oh, they went viral and the hock to a girl. Perfect example. Right? Just blew up overnight. This one little silly clip and she became a household name for a little while. And people think that's what happens when you become a creator. It ain't. It sure isn't, especially on podcasts. It's a grind. But like, I love it. It's the best grind in the world.
Yeah.
Because I get to do this. This is my job. I get to sit down with like the best companies in the world and talk about their product and learn the secrets.
Consistency is so important. You know,
it's everything.
Passion will fuel people to start. But it's having the perseverance will get you over the line.
Mm. I have like different words for each year. I just literally reset my words for next year. And it's like focus, intensity, and bold. They're my three words for this year. Focus and intensity are the two. You talk about three legs to a stool. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being able to, can you maintain your attention long enough? Can you work with it in serious enough intensity? And for the next year, it's changed to bold just to, can you have a big enough vision? Can you go beyond now, Ireland?
I like it. Yeah, the central kind of pillar to our belief system, our core values at Whoop is finding people with high intensity and high humility. And that's the thing that anytime I'm interviewing people to come to Whoop, that those are the two things you're looking for. You know, you have the All Blacks with their no dickhead policy, although I'm not sure that's true after the last World Cup, but it's a similar idea, right? It's about having an intensity of drive that will meet the needs the business has in terms of this insatiable desire for growth and to win, but come at everything with humility. So you have strong opinions, but you hold them weekly, and we're kind to each other, but hard in the work. And
not win at all costs. Too many people think it's that.
Yeah.
It's not that.
I agree. Yeah.
It'll get you somewhere. Might get you somewhere you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I'd rather have a hole in the team than an asshole in the team.
Oh, nice.
It's true. Like, yeah. It's, and like, look, but that's, you have to have your...
I might steal that
there one. You go, there, steal that. You can wow them in the meeting tomorrow going, guys, new philosophy. I'll hear it in the Woop podcast in 6 months. Yeah. I'm like...
That was mine.
That was mine. Trademark. You spend so much of your life at work. You don't have to, people don't, but like, you have to be able to, like, I was actually met Damien Brown, you know, the guy that rode across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
I met him this morning. Fascinating character. He's right up your street. Fascinating character. I'd love to have seen his Whoop data from rowing across the Atlantic. But he was talking about, like, just the focus and the intensity it takes to do anything like that.
I say the mental load on a road, on a trip like that, would be
like, so you start off, the two of them started off, and the other guy got sick within, like, I think a week. So then he got taken off the boat and he rode on his own. But imagine the mental strength to just go
insane.
There's no quitting.
Mm-hmm.
Off I go on my own on a 2-person boat. He's different gravy. Like, I was fascinated to meet him. Like, such an interesting character, but full of humility.
Yeah.
That's why I bring it up. Like, just full of humility, full of realness. We had a real honest, real conversation about being a dad and what do you want from your life, and like, just talking about all those different challenges and stuff. But he's rooted in humility. Like, for all he's achieved.
I think, though, there's something interesting in the Irish psyche that makes us humble by default.
To a fault, almost.
Correct. You're absolutely spot on. A conversation I have with my leadership colleagues in Boston is about how strong the team is in Ireland. And I think it's in our genes that we all automatically tick the humility bucket. So I'm just looking for intense people, and they largely tick both boxes in Ireland. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I was listening to somebody on your podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you were having this conversation with him. He was saying that something he learned the hard way was self-promotion.
And it was DC, like, Callan, maybe. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, it's so Irish. It's like, oh, thanks, Penny. It's like, stop.
Oh, sure, it's grand. Yeah.
Stop it. Like, we as a nation, we're all encouraging each other to reach higher. We need to stop saying that. We all need to step up, not reach higher, because this country is full of incredibly talented people, highly educated people, come with, you know, everything with humility. Generally, everybody's kind of sound here. It's rare you find someone that doesn't, you know, doesn't reach that. And, you know, the last 20 years has completely changed this country. We are this island, small little island to the edge of Europe, but we're full of tech-savvy, highly educated, very metropolitan. That doesn't exist in so many countries.
Yeah.
Our media is so focused on what's happening outside of the country. That doesn't happen in other countries. And it's all a function of being this little island to the edge of Europe. But it's sort of in our DNA, and I think we need, you can feel a change in the wind, right? Was it about 20 years ago Google came to Ireland? It was the first of that kind of Web 2 businesses that came.
They were one of the first, weren't they?
They were. You had your Intels and your Apples here from years back, but the first big internet company, I think, somebody will prove me wrong, but it was the first of a domino effect. I mean, I was there when Facebook came, and then Twitter came, and LinkedIn, and the ball was in motion at that point. But the impact that has had on the country, the skill set that exists here, the experience of people here, we need to stop, you know, doubting ourselves. Keep the humility, but never doubt ourselves. Because I see stronger talent here than I do in any other market that I'm hiring.
That's incredible to hear, because like you see it across, like you see it across many regions, I'm sure, and you see different things. But I think we do, I think we're at a bit of a tipping point here. Like, it's very, very important that we don't have a brain drain again, because I think after COVID, the world's now flat. You can now really go where you want.
Yeah.
You know, the genie's out of the bottle here. This whole 9 to 5, I'm banging this drum all the time, because I meet people and I'm like, you have to talk about this, because people are like brushing under the carpet going, we don't know what's going on, so we're just not going to talk about it. Like, that's the worst stuff. That's the worst idea ever. It's the most Irish thing as well. Like, Uncle Jimmy's a bit of a character. That means a lot of things. It means a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
Jeremy's a bad dude, right? But they kind of, oh, he's a bit of a character. Fond of the drink. You know, like, there's so many things we have in Ireland that we just brush under the carpet. Like, we have to very much face on the new world reality. And if we do, all the things you said, highly tech savvy, intelligent. We've got so many advantages here. Such a talent pool coming out of these big companies as well. We're ideally placed to go one or two different ways. How did you get involved in this whole game?
Oof. Well,
take me way back.
Yeah, take you way back. So I was lucky in my, if I go way back to the start, I wasn't brilliant at school. I wasn't natural, like, academic at all. I wouldn't be here without a mother that had incredible patience and perseverance with me, because I just wanted to kick a football or a rugby ball. Actually, it didn't matter what shape the ball was. I wanted to do that. But I, you know, found a natural interest in tech. I was always kind of interested in business. My dad was an entrepreneur. I see a lot of my own personal traits now fall from my experiences as a child. Like, my memories of waking up in the morning was, I'd look to my left and my dad would be sitting at his desk doing a bit of work before he goes out the door. The end of the day, the last thing I'd do is I'd be going to my bedroom and I'd look to my right and my dad is sitting there at his desk with, you know, spotlight down, working hard.
What was he doing?
Well, so he was in construction, as most people were, I think, in his whole life, really. But,
well, construction, farming, then the nurse, and the guards,
several,
right?
It's several businesses, that's really it, right? But he worked bloody hard, and I think that deeply rooted in me, and I think I realize now that my love, or the joy you can find in a hard day's work, came from, like, your product of your environment, right?
You have to see it to be it.
I wasn't a fan of school. I wasn't definitely natural at school. But I uncovered, through a cousin of mine that did it, a course in UCC called BIS, Business Information Systems. You got to remember, this is early days of internet. There were no such things as laptops. Right? There was a computer lab with computers you could go into.
Yeah.
internet was kind of becoming a thing. And so I went and I did that course. It kind of straddled computer science and commerce. So it hit me perfectly. And while I was there, social media became a thing. You know, Bebo took over, right?
Yeah.
Long before there were rumors of this social media platform in universities in the States called the Facebook.
Yeah.
Really early days.
These were the same vintage. We can actually talk about this.
Yeah. Everyone then, one Christmas, got a digital camera. Do you remember that Christmas? Yeah. Everyone had it the night out.
Yeah, I remember I got, like, the calculator watch was my first one. And then the first phone, Siemens
C35. Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I was a Nokia 32 head now. But yeah.
But, like, we talked about it there, like, I think it's, you kind of, sometimes you remember rose-tinted glasses, but, like, there was massive leaps forward in technology.
For sure.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
The first mobile phone. Yeah. Like, we sound like we're 100, we're not. That's huge. From going from zero to this.
Yes. No, for
that's
sure.
That's a fundamental change in how you live.
30 pence text message.
Well, all you could do is text someone or play Snake. Yeah, you couldn't really do very much else.
Although Snake 2 was a bit of a revelation. It now had a head.
Yeah, I used to sell mobile phones. And that was where I made my first few quid, was like buying and selling mobile phones at markets and stuff. Buying the covers. Remember the snap-on covers?
Oh, God, yeah.
And unlocking phones. That was my sideline. I don't think you can retroactively get charged. I used to work for O2 as well. Yeah,
there you can't go.
get around. retroactively charged for this. Unlocking phones at markets on a Sunday. That's something that made like a few quid. But it was such a big thing. Yeah, like,
big time.
Jeez, weird. The first Christmases, he worked in a mobile phone shop in Nina. Christmas, like the truck would pull up and like these brown boxes full of like Aircell phones.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And we couldn't keep them sold.
Yeah.
Because people were buying the Curious, first but, yeah. phone.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really think of many technologies now that really are that much of a leap forward.
Yeah, very few. So at BIS, that was the time that those businesses were beginning to move in. So Google came to Dublin, and I moved to Dublin to work for Google. You know, I was one of the classic Cork heads who, you know, People's Republic and all that jazz. I had friends that moved to London or to Boston or New York to go to the place and the job would follow. I moved for the job and the city just came with it. Now, I should say I've absolutely fallen in love with Dublin, and in the time I've been here, it's sort of big enough that there's always something interesting going on, but it's small enough that you can walk from one side to the other in a realistic
way. Yeah, I've said that to people as well. They're like, oh, what should I do in Dublin? I was like, well, you can probably walk across it if you want. They're like, really? Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's come from London or whatever. I'm like, they're like, what should I do? I'm like, yeah, you can do all the tourist stuff, but you probably just walk the length of it and have a look around.
Exactly.
They think it's weird. They think I'm taking the piss. I'm like, no, seriously, you can just probably walk around.
So I joined Google before there was like an internship program, before there was any sort of new entry program thrown into like ad quality review, at a time where Google was a search engine. It just about opened Gmail.
Right.
So I got a pretty privileged Gmail account now.
You were there right at the coalface then.
Yeah, right at the start when, you know, before, it's, I'm not going to call it a circus now, but it's like a different planet now, right?
It's a behemoth office. Now, it's everything.
But looking back on it now, it was a pretty normal office with some beanbags in one corner. There was a table tennis table that I spent quite a bit of time at, and a fridge full of smoothies. That was basically the game changer.
And it was back then.
It was.
That was like, hippies with beanbags down in Barrow Street.
We also went on like ski trips and things like that, which were complete privileges, but very fun time to be there. I was there for the bones of 7 years, where the business went through this complete evolution from search engine starting to open up a couple of things to the behemoth that it is today. It also was 500 or 600 people in one, soon after, two buildings in Dublin. It's like a college campus at this point. There was 12,000 in the company when I left 7 years later. But I bounced around, just trying to get as much exposure as possible. Spent a lot of time working on YouTube when Google bought YouTube for the crazy sum of 1.8 billion. And I remember the internet blew up when they spent 1.8 billion on this platform.
That was the demise. I remember people saying Google was finished because they'd lost control of themselves because they bought YouTube. Yeah. I remember I was early watching YouTube. I was like, this is class. Like TV without any ads? This is future. And I can watch just what I want.
I have to be honest with you, Gary. My team was responsible for putting the ads on YouTube, actually. Because it had to be monetized.
It was going so well.
But I remember,
for ages, they couldn't figure it out.
We did invent the skip button, right? And that was something I'm pretty proud of that my 8-year-old daughter doesn't quite appreciate. But there was a time where you used to have to sit for 30 seconds. And
that was the end of the world, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what a privileged leap we had from sitting at a TV where you had to watch what was on at like 8 o'clock to like watching anything you want, whenever you want.
Well, Charlie bit my finger, paid a few more visits. But while working at YouTube, I started to work with some big accounts, big brands that were trying to figure out this new frontier of advertising. The likes of, you know, Paddy Power and Old Spice was a fun
one. I'm on a horse?
Yeah, I met him actually, and yes, he is as handsome in real life.
He's such a charismatic dude.
Yeah.
God, give me his voice, please. My podcast would just go.
There you go. But during that time, I realized that actually I had real passion for marketing, for figuring out how to be creative and to connect with an audience and build a business on the back of it. I kind of realized then, okay, I'm going to hit a ceiling here. I want to go client side. Not long after, I got tapped on the shoulder for an opportunity at O2 to work in the brand team there. and you're talking about the Irish rugby team and the O2 music venue, two pretty big carrots to get involved in.
Especially in the Irish scene, like they were huge. Like the Irish rugby team and
really fun time.
And the O2-3 arena, whatever you're going to call it now.
So I was there when 3 came in, and that itself was a fascinating journey, completely different culture, huge project to rebrand everything O2 to 3. O2 was such a huge brand at the time.
You've had a knack of picking your moments.
Yeah.
This is like, you definitely have a sense.
Yeah. Well, I'll take that.
Is it intentional, or are you just a lucky general?
Well, I think you've got to take responsibility for your own career. I think it's really important. Don't sit around waiting for someone else to find the next opportunity for you.
Mm-hmm. Very few people get the door knock. I always say that to people about their health as well. So I'll talk about my health journey with Whoop in a while. But like, if you're not in charge of your own career and your health and your mental fitness,
100%.
Someone else will decide it for you.
100%.
You'll get an unexpected call someday, or no one's going to go, do you know what, Breen? Here's an unbelievable opportunity for you.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
People think like the one in a million shot is coming for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. You need to break down that door.
So from 3, Fitbit, independent Fitbit at the time, chose Dublin as their EMEA HQ. So they were just post-IPO. They were looking at where the next S-curve is, and international was very much it. So I jumped on and was responsible for digital and most marketing across EMEA for Fitbit. And about 4 years in, Google bought Fitbit. And the thought of going back into the machine.
Just when I thought I got out, they pulled me back in.
I realized, though, myself that I thrived at the earlier stage.
Right.
Like, I'm not. What I was saying was the fraud at the top. So I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm very entrepreneurial in my approach. I'm not the guy for go from 0 to 1. I'm the guy to go from 5 to 500.
Mm-hmm.
Google just didn't hit me. And
well, you'd been there and done that, right? You'd been there at that. The 5 to 500 mark. You'd experienced it, and then with 02 and 3, you'd seen the brand become different again. So like,
for
and
sure.
with Fitbit again, you've built up your reps, like you've built up the pattern recognition.
Yeah, true. And then, so when I did get the call about this opportunity at Whoop, Whoop was a pretty unknown quantity at that stage. I was aware of them because they were hitting the competitor landscape. You were one of very few customers at the time outside of the US. But I got the call, had a good conversation with the headhunter at the time. It was ticking a lot of my boxes. But the opportunity was actually in Amsterdam. At the time, just personal circumstances, my dad had terminal cancer, unfortunately. My father-in-law was very unwell at the time. So I was having great conversations with this guy, but I was like, but I don't think, I think we're going to have to leave it here because it doesn't matter what the check looks like. I'm not going to be able to move.
With the best will in the world, there's just sometimes life.
Yeah, exactly.
Just isn't life malleable. Usually it is, but sometimes it isn't.
And so he kind of said, look, I think you're a really good fit here. Let me just have a conversation. And so I got another email and said, the CMO wants to meet you next Friday. I said, oh, cool. So I very quickly jump onto LinkedIn and see who in the idea I'm connected with. I was like, give me your Dublin pitch deck. So give me anything to do. Like, how do you position Ireland? What's the tax rate? How do you do
it? I love it. Again, you took charge, though. You decided, I'm not going to go Amsterdam. I think a lot of people go, oh, well. And but keep scrolling.
I was sold at this time. Now I'm ready to invest in this thing. So I got the Dublin pitch decks. I got all of the information on how to woo these foreign direct investors. And I got on to the call with Antonio Bertone, his name was. And he said, let me talk to you. I said, hang on, let me talk to you about Dublin first. Let me tell you the benefits of Dublin and, you know, the well of talent that exists because of the, you know, plethora of international tech companies. If I need an Arabic speaker, there's, you know, 4,000 of them in Dublin, and you're looking for French salespeople. And funnily enough, afterwards, obviously we spoke about my experience and why Whoop and all of that, but afterwards he told me that it was at that point when I was talking about my personal circumstances as to why Amsterdam wouldn't work and the passion that I spoke to the opportunity in Ireland. He said afterwards at that point, he was like, yeah, he's one of us.
Nice.
So
that's a creative approach to a problem. Like, yeah. People can respect that. Like, not just, you know, it's kind of the difference between kind of like high performers and people who kind of get by is that they go, okay, but there's probably another way. There's always another way if you really want it.
Yeah. And like the rest is history. I'm here coming up in 4 years in the new year.
They're big 4 years that like Whoop is transformed. Yeah. Like I think I said this already. Yeah. Like when I got this, like people were like, what's that? Where's the screen in your watch?
Very early. On the international journey.
Yeah, it was super early.
I mean, again, you know, I was international employee number one. And we've built a team. There's 10 or 12 marketers based around Dublin. We do have 60, I think it is, membership services staff in Limerick. We have an office in Limerick.
Oh, cool.
There's around 70, 75 of us in Ireland now, which is great.
That's
coming
cool.
from that one first phone call, it's pretty satisfying.
175 is...
And then I have a group of marketing managers sitting in key markets, UK, Germany, Middle East, Australia, etc.
Okay.
To be the boots on the ground and to be that local knowledge so that everything that we do bring to market has an understanding of a local consumer.
That's huge.
Yeah.
A lot of the startup founders I talk about having that issue, especially to start in Ireland, to go to the UK and they're like... We thought it'd be similar. It's completely different. And we thought Leeds be the same as London.
No.
Completely different again. We thought Middlesbrough would be like Glasgow. Completely different. Yeah. Like there's no getting around boots on the ground.
I think a lot of it is depending on how close your category or business is to culture.
I was just going to say that. Sport, health
and fitness is so culturally sensitive. I mean, you're aware of the big global partners we have, but we also have a whole roster of partners in either specific sports, like everything from mountain biking to winter sports, or local faces that give us that relevance. Like I mentioned, David Clifford or Conor Murray or Fintan McCarthy. He'd never hit the radar in the US.
Of course.
He's incredibly relevant in Ireland today. It helps us tell a powerful story to connect with consumers in a value add marketing way that builds awareness of the brand, the product, and the benefit. Mm. And that's the first barrier to growth. Then obviously all of the things around, you know, your pricing, promotions, all of that. You need to talk, you need to be all over the detail of the specifics on the tactics. But don't start there. Start with strategy. Get that right. Mm. And then you can get to the tactics. They're about refining the efficacy of your initiatives then in your marketing.
I think you've made a really important point there. It's great having Ronaldo. But then if you can close that loop and have it someone I talk about, see it to be it all the time, if you can close it down to someone that actually they've seen on the street in Dublin or Limerick or Cork or Kerry, that closes the whole loop.
Yeah.
You've gone from the very top to the local, like, you know, think local, act global, that whole kind of thing. Like, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, if you can see someone like you wearing it, but also see the best athlete in the world wearing it, you're like, there's definitely something to this.
I think what's interesting though, when I talk about the go-to-market strategy and segmentation, you may think of Whoop as being for the hardcore fitness fanatic. I said a while ago that they'll always be the nucleus of who we target. But actually, the majority of the people that we're acquiring right now sit in a different category that we call high achievers. People that generally hold the bar high in everything that they do in their life. And so we're kind of... one of the things that we're riding is a movement around an awareness of the importance of your sleep, your mental health, your ability to recover. You know, when I go back to my early days at Google, it was about, you know, how many pints you could drink in a Friday night. People aren't doing that now.
No.
Of course it exists, right? And, you know, we've data that shows that Gen Z drink less, but they drink more when they do drink. So there's a culture of binge drinking. But more and more people they think about Friday night to wake up really great on Saturday morning because they want to go to their run club and see the sun come up.
Precisely. Yeah.
So we
there's a couple of tailwinds behind you.
Yeah, for sure. So these, you know, movements go from fad to trend to lifestyle to culture, and we're kind of riding this wave of. It's gone further than trend. It's a lifestyle now.
It is.
We're becoming a lifestyle brand, and it's being firmly embedded into culture. It's just part of how people operate today. People are more intentional about their sleep behaviors and when they eat and, you know, how much alcohol they're taking and when they're, you know, what supplements they're taking. And so it's a big tailwind that we're leaning into in a big way to help people unlock their best selves. For when they need to.
But you're helping people control their psychology in a better way. Because we're the easiest person to fool in the world is yourself. You know, you kind of, sure, it's grand. You know, 5 pints, whatever, it's grand. But then you wake up the next day and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, right. There's the actual action, reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, the action is fine. But then when you see without the reaction and what I said to you earlier, so what?
Yeah.
Oh, my recovery's 15.
Definitely.
So what?
Yeah, definitely.
You're going to feel what, so what?
So the people that we're acquiring today may have been, just like myself, may have been an aspiring athlete at some point. So we're heavily influenced by these apex performers on a court and on a bike and on a pitch. But really being in the green for me benefits me just as much in the boardroom and being a dad as it does any athlete stepping out onto a pitch.
Precisely.
And it's that realization that you get more out of life when you're in the green. And so your ability to understand your body better through the data that that thing is pulling, through the insights that it comes in your app to make smarter decisions so that you wake up on the green on Saturday morning and you go out with Willow and have a bloody great day. That's life.
Exactly.
It's not,
that's a rich life as well.
Right?
That's just not living. That's just not existing. That's living.
Correct.
It's a big, big difference. God, I sound like a whoop out here. Like, but it's true. Like, these are the truth. And I think there's been, like, I've shifted the focus of the podcast to brain, body, and business. Because without the first two, there is no third one that's worth having. Like, how many times have you heard that cliche? Oh, he or she was a great business person, built a great business, dropped out at 55. What's the point?
What's it worth?
What's the point? Like, I've spoken to a lot of great entrepreneurs and great founders who are inherently miserable because they don't have the other things going on. And I was like, why am I doing this if I'm not changing my behaviors and helping other people change their behaviors through having a more holistic view on things? Especially after COVID, I think it gives people a lot of pause to go, maybe I don't have to do it that way. Maybe I don't have to go to the office 5 days a week. Maybe I don't have to go out and have 20 pints on a Friday. Maybe there's a different way of doing it. And I think having that pause, it was horrific at the time, it shattered the world. But you can see it as a crisis or an opportunity now. I think a lot of people have seen this going, right, this is a reset. This is the reset I want to build that different future. And it's through things like Whoop where you're like, right, there's now, like, to have that data. I said this some other day. So I started... We're in Whoop in 2019. I kind of went on a whole health and longevity journey. Started with a private longevity doctor, doing my bloods every 6 months, went on a whole longevity program. And I've managed to reverse my age, my biological age, by 9 years.
Incredible.
So I'm 41, but I'm actually 32.
Incredible.
Huge. Like, but 20 years ago, you're not doing that. You're not understanding any of this.
Yeah.
I'm not understanding what my daily habits are. I'm not getting my bloods done. You'd have to have millions.
Yeah.
Like if we said to Breen and Gary when we're 15 going, you're going to have this device on your arm that's going to tell you everything that's going on in your body. You'd be like, holy, welcome to the future. Yeah. And I think we do take things for granted too much. We take our phones for granted. But if you're not using them for the proper purpose, why would you not?
Yeah.
That's the thing I can't understand.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is that a lot of devices, and going back to competitive space here, but this is an interesting insight, I think, a lot of devices work to motivate you. A lot of trackers, their goal is to motivate you. Whoop isn't for people that need motivation.
Precisely.
Whoop is for the motivated. And the first thing I say is, so many people say, oh, should I get one? I'm like, well, what? Tell me about you. Tell me about your needs.
What you want to
achieve. It doesn't suit everybody.
Yeah.
And that's totally okay.
If you're everybody, if you're for everybody, you're for nobody.
Yeah.
If you're a vanilla brand, you're just for nobody.
But that is one of the core reasons why Whoop exists today. Because to the very core, back in 2015, when Gen 1 launched, they had a point of view on who is it for. And by definition, who is it not for.
Yeah.
And so as culture has evolved to catch up with these apex performers, the first 100 users, you had Michael Phelps and LeBron James, right? It just speaks volumes to Will as a founder.
Yeah.
But that set the tone from the very first generation.
Hmm.
I think you've touched on something so powerful that once in a generation, there's resets. You can look at COVID as an awful time, and it was. It was an absolutely desperate time, but so much positive has actually come from it because people have woken up to so many things that we used to just take for granted or put up with. People are living with far more intention today and recognizing what are the things that really matter to us.
Like, when you look at what is available to you now for little cost, it's wild. You have like every single, you have what professional athletes would have had 10 years ago and better. Access to knowledge, the knowledge of how your body operates. Not just general knowledge, because we don't need more data. We need the so what data. We need personalized data to you that allows you to, I say to people, like, it's funny you say that about like when people ask you, should I get one? I asked them as well. I was like, oh, what's your goals? What's your normal week? And I was like, look, it's a nudge. This is a nudge in the right direction. This isn't going to haul your arse to the gym. So this isn't going to get you to get up. Doesn't tell you to get up off the couch and do more steps. It's like, it's not a step counter. I was like, but it will give you a more holistic view if that's what you were looking for, like the strain, the recovery, the sleep. This is more like a lifestyle that you embrace. It's not just like a step counter. Because a lot of people still think they should wear a step counter. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. You're not a gerbil. You're not my dog. You don't need two walks a day. Like, you know, you need to be more realistic on how you approach
it. It's horses for courses. I think I say this to everybody, buy the device that meets your needs. But it sounds like I should have you in the payroll, Gary.
Look, I'm not against it. And now there's no more entrepreneur experiment. You didn't take much convincing. What campaigns are you most proud of?
Ooh, that's a good question.
We're an hour in. I was kind of due one, to be fair.
Yeah, I was talking for a bit of a while there, right? At Whoop, I think what we're doing today in cycling is really powerful. So we identified cycling or the cyclist audience as one of these groups of people that are, you know, tick our box from a demographic perspective. They're high disposable income, they're tech forward, they participate in a high cardiovascular sport, they're clearly health or fitness conscious. And also from a marketing landscape perspective, it's a very traditional category. You have the same brands advertising in cycling for decades.
It's a good point, actually. It is quite insular when you think of it.
So we partnered with a couple of cycling teams that were organically using the product. We partnered with them for a couple of reasons. One, obviously getting access to their riders to start storytelling with them. But mainly to get access to the rider data. So we've done a partnership, it's a multi-year partnership at this point, with Warner Brothers Discovery around Eurosport, and now it's going on to TNT Sports, to take rider data and add it into the viewing experience. We've now extended it actually to mountain bikes. In the Mountain Bike World Series, if you turn it on any weekend, you'll see at various points every hour, you'll see a rider in a breakaway or doing something crazy, and suddenly their heart rate or their strain data or stress level data is live on the screen.
It's wild.
And it's a story for the commentators to tell. And that's, again, I'm like a parrot here, but it's the difference between advertising and marketing. We're adding to the viewer experience. Your cyclists are kind of a small bit nerdy as well, right? So they love that extra layer of data. Mm-hmm. And it adds a new layer of storytelling for the commentators to talk about, not just, Matthew van der Poel in the breakaway and he's been there for 20 minutes and they're catching up.
They're probably delighted because it's so long. They might be on air for 3 hours.
But you can see it in his data, right? You can see just how hard this guy is working. And now they're beginning to calculate, can he keep it up?
Mm.
Actually, he's reaching max capacity.
Add some drama, here. Yeah.
And are they going to catch
narrative.
Up?
Yeah.
It's so interesting. So we obviously wrap all of that in, you know, before show and after show that I'm not involved in the day-to-day, but they work their butts off to get rider data overnight into the hands of the studio commentators so they can see how well someone slept in the last 7 days. And they can correlate how well somebody has slept relative to how they're performing on their bike and they're recovering well and they're not recovering well and how that all plays out on the road. Mm. And then, you know, of course, we pump it full of ads as well to really bring the commercial message home, because any of those integrations are all about, the editorial teams are always sensitive to how much brand exposure commercial.
And there's a fine line between subtlety and it passing over people's heads as well.
Correct. Correct. You have
can't be
to.
Too subtle.
Yeah, you have to rhyme at home as well at a certain level. Mm. So that's been a real game changer. Cycling was new for international when we went. So when I started and the whole team came on board, or you know, we built up the team and started to plot out our growth across Europe, we were looking for these opportunities to find communities that we knew we had a good product market fit. And then we started to think about, okay, how do we creatively market to these people?
Mm.
So that was a big undertaking, but a deceptively small investment for what you would think. And that's all about being smart about who you're partnering with. Because, of course, you can jump straight to the Premier League and pay 8 figures to be on the side of Man City's training ground. But for us, the logo isn't enough.
Mm.
Because people see that and goes, oh, it's a step counter kind of Fitbit kind of thing. Actually, storytelling around what makes it different, what makes it better, is when you see the needle move.
That's future marketing. That I honest to God believe this is the future of marketing. Like, and I think Will does a great job as a founder-led brand, but it's not just him. I think sometimes you can have one or the other. You can have a really big brand and then the founder is kind of lost. But like, I say this to Ben all the time when people come on, I was like, it's such a pity that so few founders have embraced this storytelling element of their brand.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's what people want. Like, I can tell when we're having a chat with someone going, this will resonate or it won't, because they're unwilling to tell stories, they're unwilling to be human and unwilling to like be real and actually tell what's happening. Like having your banner on the side of Man City, again, never put anything on Man City. If you had it on the side of Carrington or Old Trafford, I'd be like, oh, look.
Sorry, misspoke there.
It's okay, we'll let it out. But I just think it's lost in the noise, right?
Mm.
Whereas like if, you know, people have such, I was actually reading a really good article a few weeks ago, I can't remember where it is, I'll try to find it and send it to you, about now younger generations are following players, not teams.
Oh yeah, big time, big time.
And I noticed it last year in Spain. We were in Spain last August, September, and it was just after Messi joined Inter Miami. And this is Spain. This is the home of Real and Barca and Atletico. This is
a pink jersey.
This is a football
everywhere.
Country, right? Mm-hmm. This is a passionate country. And the amount of Inter Miami jerseys, they were everywhere.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
All through Spain. Yeah. Kids like 8, 10 maybe, mm-hmm. Inter Miami jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me on to David Beckham, been a marketing bloody genius. But that's by the by.
Yeah.
Like just kids following players, not teams.
Yeah.
And that just it also plays into your hands again, you know what I mean? Because Whoop is worn by the player, not the team.
I coach my daughter's under 10s, under 11s football team.
The only under 11 team in Ireland with all Whoop data.
The amount of times I hear them talking to each other saying, are you Messi or Ronaldo? It's mad.
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, you're talking about girls that probably didn't see either of them play.
The glory days, you know? Yeah.
That's so interesting. And then when they see on my Instagram that I was hanging out with Cristiano a few months ago,
they're like, "Dad's finally cool. I told you." Just. Whereas you're like, "Susie, yeah, you're not playing today. Recovery way too low. You're playing a PlayStation way too late last night." What are you excited about? Because it's a bloody exciting brand. If people haven't guessed already, what are you most excited about?
This is a stupidly vague response, but I'm very excited about the future.
I was just going to say, don't say the future.
But it's true,
specifically, man. What though?
Unfortunately, there's things I can't tell you about the product.
We'll just have to have you back on then.
Right. But I think we are, as a culture, as a society, at this really interesting point where things are evolving. People's, you know, understanding of their body, people's behaviors from a lifestyle perspective, and ultimately people's goals are changing. And so the further we get in our journey as a product and brand of understanding our consumers, and the deeper we go and all the correlations, and we start to think about, what are the other ways we can use the data? And what are the other benefits that we can serve up to our members? You know, one of the things that I didn't touch on of what makes Whoop difference is the business model of it being a membership. You know, Whoop started as a B2B product in 2015. Generation 2 went B2C, but it was being sold at like $600 a device. There was a bet the business moment in 2028 when they launched this membership. And what's interesting is that creates real challenges from a business perspective. You're suddenly going from not getting $500 in the door. There's a whole cash flow consideration that people don't
calculate. Don't really factor in, and you churn, then it's very easy to churn.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Whereas you make your revenue over time and your members. But what the membership does is it creates a complete culture shift relative to every other hardware business out there, which is that, you know, at my time of Fitbit, the whole business was focused on what the next product was. And every 6 months, there was a new product. It was either a tracker or a smartwatch came.
Of course. I didn't actually think of that, actually. Right? Yeah. I never even thought of that. It's a single product company. Yeah.
And you'd focus on, hey, that product, get it out the door. And then the devs would go, right, so over to sales and marketing. And you'd pump a big campaign out and you'd sell as many as possible. And lots of them would walk out the door, brilliant, hitting all their targets. Right, so next move, right, what's coming up at Easter? Mm-hmm. But the thing about it from a consumer perspective is that the day you walked out of Harvey Norman with that new Fitbit under your wrist was the best that device will ever be. Mm. It was downhill from there. But it was okay because, hey, in 12 months' time, we'll see you again for the next one. Yeah. It's going to be a little bit thinner and it'll be, you know, a little bit better.
Because that's how tech was. People look at iPhones and all that kind of stuff, pixels and all that kind of crack, yeah.
However, switching to a membership model at Whoop transformed the relationship that our whole company has with, we don't talk about consumers, we talk about members.
Mm. Even that is important.
So one of the core values we have is obsess over the member experience. And really what that means is that when a member purchases their Whoop and gets it into their, you know, their you know, post box and gets onto their wrist, that's the worst the device will ever be. Mm. Because it's a membership and because we risk member churn all the time, we have to fight for your euro every single month because you have a choice. We've bet the business so much that you can try it for free for 30 days now. So we've completely collapsed the barrier to entry. So you're not kind of showing your kind of interest. Hey, try it. Get it, try it. And we're betting that you're actually going to enjoy this so much that you will decide to come on and become a member. But crucially, there's a continual evolution of the product so that new features and benefits, because we have to, because our members have a choice at any stage. And so I'd love to talk. Maybe when the camera stops rolling, you can get sign a brilliant, quick NDA.
Brilliant.
But there's some really exciting evolutions coming up that speak to the evolving consumer, the evolving context that we find ourselves as a business and as a society. And I'm excited about how we can continue to deliver more value to our members month over month.
But when you see people wearing continuous blood glucose monitors, not because they've got diabetes, but because they want to like seek out that extra couple of percent of performance to see what's going on in their body, because they can, for 30 quid a month or whatever, they can get a blood glucose monitor and then learn what difference food makes to them. If we said that to someone 10 years ago, they'd be like, come on. I'm bullish, but not that bullish. You know, so like it feels like we're at a tipping point, right, in terms of the whole longevity space. When I started working with that doctor in 2020, people thought I was crackers. They thought I was off my head, getting your bloods done. For what? What's wrong? Nothing. I want to make sure nothing will go wrong. Whereas now people are like, can you give me your man's name? What are you taking?
Yeah.
What supplements are you on?
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm very transparent. I wrote like a 3,000 word email about it like a couple of weeks ago, sent it to like 1,400 people. I revealed everything. I went in there thinking I was, and this is the perfect example of why I started using Whoop and why I always will. I went in there thinking I was going to get a pat on the back. I train all the time. I train every day. And I was going in there in great shape. And I was like, your man's going to tell me I'm Benjamin Button here. He's going to go, we've never seen stats like this. And he goes, a few weeks later, he come back and I got a full, like literally from my toes to my hair. He inspected every single part of my body and then it bloods as well. And 4 weeks later, I went back and I was like, oh, here we go, all excited. And he goes, yeah, your cholesterol is really high. Your blood glucose is really high. Your testosterone is that of a 65-year-old man. And you've an irregular heartbeat.
Oof. Oof.
Honest to God, you could. I just kind of sat there and I was like, Christ, what does that mean? The so what moment. I had that and it was like a light bulb and I came out and I was shocked, but so excited. Because I was like, right, now we start. Now we know. I would have had that for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. Would have been in there when I was 65, 70 going, don't feel very well. Yeah. My dad's had multiple stents.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know this when he was 41.
It is an absolute privilege to have those tools at our fingertips. And it's way beyond Whoop. Like the all of those things that are so attainable for so many of us. You know, the goal isn't health. The goal, have you read Peter Attia's book,
Outlive? Some superb.
It's about purpose. Yeah. It all comes down to why we're doing this thing and what's the point. And so you can work your butt off. But if you're not achieving what you want to achieve at a holistic level in your life, what's the point?
Mm. Almost going to work on to our quick fire round now.
Okay.
But just tell me a little bit more about where people can find out a little bit more about Whoop and even about yourself and your brand story. I was talking to Ronan, we're talking about LinkedIn and he was calling you like a mini LinkedIn influencer now.
Rumors are terrible, aren't they?
I love LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn organic reach for the podcast is through the roof. It's brilliant. Organic, I don't have to put paid spend behind it. It reaches my exact target audience. Unbelievable. Put video there, it'll fly. Tell me a little bit more about where people can learn about more about Whoop and about yourself.
I mean, look, you go to whoop.com. It's the place to go. If you need to uncover more or understand more about the features and benefits, partners that we have, some really interesting content and storytelling up there. But ultimately, I said it a while ago, the proof is in the pudding. We believe in this product so much is that people can go on and order it for free for 30 days. No questions asked. If it doesn't suit you, send it back. There's no payment on the back of it. But that's something that has really transformed the momentum that we're experiencing in the business, because you can best understand this thing, the benefits of it, when you strap it on, when you see it for yourself.
I've said that any of my friends that have got one, I was like, after 7 days, it's going to be great, good. After 21 days, it's going to be unreal. And after a month, it's going to be telling you stuff you never knew about yourself. It's true, though. It just gets better and better. I'm going to sweeten the deal as well. If anyone joins after this episode, they can join my private Whoop group for the for the podcast, right? Surely that's enough of an incentive to see what I'm working out on a daily basis. As Ben, you're going to be definitely in, as Ben knows, I get competitive in there. It can be a vicious space. Sometimes on a Sunday I can send Ben a very abusive message about it. I'm just waiting for Monday at 3 o'clock when you reveal who topped the top that week.
Okay.
If I'm not top that week, I've bullen.
Okay.
If someone's done sneaky session on a Sunday night, I'm bullen.
Love that. We'll see what your audience is like.
Talk about my motivation. Right, quick fire round. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur or marketer should read?
I'm going to go slightly off-piste on this one. I know most people talk about...
Don't say Shoe Dog.
But yeah. No, not at all. I'm going to recommend a book called Breath by James Nestor.
Okay. I've read it. It's brilliant.
So this is a story of the importance of breathing, right? Himself and his research partner basically tells a story of a month where they plug their nose and they see what happens. They go and they... basically get absolutely miserable for the month, right? One of them gets really sick, they're irritable, they're unable to concentrate. They've all these kind of challenges over the course of the month, but it also tells the story of sort of evolution, right? And how our primate cousins don't have any issue breathing. And it goes back in time and looks at human evolution and how there was this moment in time where when we started to control fire and eat more meat, consume more protein, what happens? All of our muscles grew. The brain's a muscle. Because of the cranium, it couldn't grow up, so it started to grow down into the skull and started to squash our nasal cavity. So we're actually the only mammal that has problems breathing. So they do the simple test. It's basically a 0 to 100 lung test. You completely empty out your lung and then you time how long it takes to go from 0 to 100. Should take you 3 to 4 seconds. Now, I broke my nose when I was 16 playing rugby. And I read this book and I read about all of the issues that happens over breathing and the knock-on effects to your physiological state, et cetera, et cetera. It was taking me nearly 9 seconds to breathe in. So I suddenly started to go, whoa, okay, well, what am I going to do here? And I started using those breathe right strips, sleeping, all of that.
Well, it worked.
I actually went to an ENT and he carved out the inside of my nose. And now I can breathe perfectly.
It's so weird.
I took it to the absolute extreme.
It's so weird.
It was a bit extreme.
You bring that up because I have to get my nose broken.
But you know,
I have a deviated septum.
Okay.
I was doing MMA 6 years ago and I broke my nose. And I didn't actually know it until I went to that doctor again. Dr. Sam was getting all the credit. He goes, oh, and you've had deviated septum. I was like, what? No? No, I don't. He goes, yeah, look, your nose is broken. And he showed me like a mirror and I was like, holy shit. No wonder I can't sleep. So I have to get my nose. So I'm doing Dublin High Rocks in November.
Okay.
And I've got to book myself in to get my nose broke after
that.
But
you know what's interesting? You can, so on Whoop, you have Whoop Coach, which you can put specific queries in. And I asked Whoop Coach to calculate the difference in my sleep before and after the date that I had the surgery.
Class.
And I have 20% more deep sleep now than I did before the surgery.
It's amazing. You read
it. I said that to my ENT when I went back and he was like, can I have a testimonial?
You need that for the website. That's class. That's amazing. Yeah, that just speeds up my referral to get this done. What's something you'd learn the hard way?
That I need to own my career. There was I was at Google. There was a time when these big reorgs happened and movements happened and I was placed in certain, you know, on a certain track that happened without my input. And that was a big realization for me that, you know, you think, you know, the big org and HR are there for you. It's actually not the case at all. You need to take responsibility for your career and be intentional about the decisions you make and be in the driver's seat as to what happens.
That's 100% true for founders and everybody. That's, you have to take control. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Family time. Being in this satellite office in Ireland, obviously my hours skew quite a bit. Inevitably, you know, I still start early in the morning, but I 3-4 days a week of late meetings. But I don't see it as much as a cost as I see it as an investment. I have a very specific horizon in which this is a project to an inevitable exit as a business, which all going well will pay off in spades.
Mm. And I think when you're as passionate about it as you are.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as sacrificial.
Mm. It's like, you know, entrepreneurial by nature. That's kind of, you can kind of tell that. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
Honestly, I'd probably disappear but my wife will tell you for about 8 or 10 weeks, and then I'd get bored. And I'd be back to find businesses to get involved with and to help scale. No question.
Okay, it's not much. 8 to 10 weeks. You're going to have a hell of an 8 to 10 weeks. A mil a week. I'm coming with you. I need to be on that journey.
Hopefully, you're listening to the pod and you're feeling inspired. Maybe you want to do new things in your own business, or maybe you have that brilliant idea you've always wanted to bring a little bit further and see if it works. So why not right now? You listen to the majority of the guests in this show, and they've been helped by the local enterprise office at some stage in the journey. They have something for everybody. Whether you have that idea you want to develop, you want to get your products to new markets, you want to innovate your existing products, or you want to expand staff and premises, they have the supports to help. So why not today? If you want to start up or grow your business, then contact your local enterprise office today.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can only invest it in one person or one company. It can't be Whoop. Who is it?
Whoop's an easy answer.
Exactly. That's what everyone says. Oh, I invested in myself.
Honestly, I think the if you really did that, Chips, I'd go with someone like an NVIDIA. The proliferation of smart home devices, they're everywhere right now. The demand for chips ain't going anywhere. Businesses like that are here for the long run.
Mm. If you were starting again in 2024, either your career or a business, what would you do?
AI-powered personal nutrition.
Specific. I love it. I hate when people go, AI. I'm like, oh God.
There are so many inputs you can take from your Whoop and your Fitbit and your Garmin and your Apple and your continuous glucose monitoring and your pee on the stick and whatever you want. There are loads of things that can be inputs. Data needs to be crunched, and then understanding what you want to achieve, whether it be weight loss, weight gain, muscle mass, but to guide you on a personal level to achieve your nutrition goals, I think is a big one, big opportunity.
I agree. I use my Fitness Pal. I track my food every day.
Yeah.
If I could have some, and it's funny, I always wish it was just a wee bit smarter.
Just crunch the data.
If you could just, I started doing, I was in a hot, this is how nerdy I am. People know already, so it's fine. I started making a database of my food, of what I like.
But you need to merge the data sets.
Yeah.
You need to correlate.
You're worse than me.
The decisions you're making in nutrition to how well you're sleeping. And to how well you're performing, and there's opportunity there.
There's tons. There's absolutely tons. What do you believe other people will find strange or strongly disagree with?
It's an easy one. I think failure is good. You know, from a business perspective, embracing failure is a key thing to being a high performance team. I find certainly with the younger generation, there's a tendency to try and cover up failure and to try and, sweep things under the rug and to procrastinate an eventual decision that, is fail fast and pivot is definitely from a business perspective, but also from a personal perspective. I think resilience is a trait learned that's undervalued today. And perseverance is what will get you where you want to go.
1,000%. Not everyone should get a medal. That's my controversial. I have tons of controversial ones, but I just don't think it doesn't make any sense, because how do you learn to get better if you don't have a barometer of like, okay, well, I could, 4 seconds faster, I would have been on third. Like, that's the nature of life. And I think that's why I love sports so much. I think that's why sports people become very good business people if they choose to go into it, because they've failed every day repeatedly. Yeah. And it's nothing to them.
Failure makes the success sweeter.
100%, yeah. Without a doubt. What's been your worst investment?
Any number of gadgets that I've bought in the hype. You know, whether it be my R1 Rabbit AI assistant or the new phone I spent, whatever, 1,200 quid on. The incremental improvement just really isn't worth it in tech like that. It speaks to big tech really struggling with innovation because they're so, you know, they're ruled by committees. And they're looking at what the competitors are doing. They're all merging into one thing. So yeah, I really shouldn't have bought that new phone. It really wasn't necessary.
What's been your best investment?
I think personal education. And I'm not talking about, like, I'm not necessarily talking about, like, the money I spent to do this course or that course. I haven't done a master's, I haven't done, but I invest time, and I do sometimes invest a few euro here and there on doing, you know, mini courses to learn from the best, and quite often in adjacent categories and adjacent fields, because I think staying curious and constantly challenging yourself is really important, because the consumers that we sell to today, like you talked about Gen Z a while ago, wait for Gen Alpha, they're speaking a different language, man. Staying on top of what's working, who's innovating, and thinking always critically about how that can apply to my own life, my own business, I think is
100%
is worth an investment.
Like staying curious, like it's the best entrepreneurs I speak to have that. They have an innate curiosity. They'll ask me tons of questions and we'll have it like we did outside. We'll have a wide range and chat of all topics. It's people come in and just, there's no curiosity. You can see the fire's gone out in them. It's the saddest thing in the world. What's your advice to every aspiring founder or aspiring like marketing lead out there?
I was at a Whoop Sober October event in London this week, and Jake Humphries was talking about it, and he gave a great quote. He's from the High Performance Podcast, and I'm sure you know it. He gave a great quote from Gordon Ramsay when he was on his podcast, and it was, don't be afraid of the storm, learn to dance in the rain. And I think that encapsulates something that I really believe in, that you have to keep going. You should never batten down the hatches. You have to figure it out. You have to get through it. But if you learn to embrace the challenge, it's not going to be as bad as you think. And storms pass. So enjoying the experience of facing your fears straight on and actually tackling those difficult scenarios, don't procrastinate. Get on it, get it done, move forward, because that's the only way you'll go through and keep going.
Momentum is everything. I talk about this in the pod all the time. Don't let the momentum drop, because anytime I've let my momentum drop in my career, my personal life, it's so hard to get that wheel going again. So when you have it, you just keep it going no matter what. I think in a post-COVID world, we've learned you can face up the worst. You can really can face up the worst, and then you can come through. There's going to be a new challenge every week. Like, the world is full of challenges. It's either opportunities or crises. You get to pick.
Absolutely. You choose, yeah.
Breen, that was phenomenally enjoyable. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Gary. I really appreciate it.